Welcome to the Jerusalem Post podcast. This is Yaakov Katz, joined by Lahav Harkov. And Lahav, you just got a good piece of news. You don't have to throw out any of your Adidas shoes.
It's true. It was a difficult couple of days there because I have a few pairs of Adidas shoes, but now I get to keep them because they have gotten rid of Kanye West.
Did you take them out of the closet and, like, you know, designate them maybe to be burned or thrown out or make, were people in Modine about to do like an Adidas bonfire?
The truth is that I was just like, I gave Adidas my money like years ago for these shoes. So like, why should I have to throw them out? but I know people were like, no, never wearing Adidas again. So
was there a movement like that?
Look, I don't know. I mean, you see it on Twitter. It's hard sometimes hard to know what translates into real life.
Maybe just tell our listeners why we're talking about Adidas. I don't know that everyone knows.
Yeezys, which are the shoes designed by Kanye West, which are huge success. People like line up around the block to buy them when new ones come out.
And they cost a lot of money. I was reading somewhere.
Yeah.
Not sure.
They are made by Adidas, and it took them like, I don't know, like 2 weeks, maybe more at this point, since Kanye West made his anti-Semitic comments. Took them a really long time to drop him. And, you know, I mean, it's a money-making decision. So I guess they went and waited to see where the weather was blowing. But basically every big fashion partnership that he had, which is a lot, including, you know, Anna Wintour, the legendary Vogue editor, they've all said now that they're cutting ties with him. So, you know, Adidas was pushed into a corner.
By the way, you know, Adidas put out a statement, which is actually interesting, where they say we're going to stop it because of his they don't tolerate anti-Semitism. And by the way, Adidas as a company has an interesting roots. It was founded in Germany. Its factories at some point were apparently used by the Nazis and were turned into ammunition factories at some point. And they tried to make right eventually with the Jewish people, and I assume they did. But this was something that, as you said, it took them a while, and it's all about money, right? They even in their statement they write, this decision to sever relations with Kanye West is expected to have a short term negative impact of up to $250 million on the company's net income just this year. I mean, that's how much money is at stake, right? Apparently, I read $1 billion annually is how much they were making off of that brand.
Which, in a way, you almost can't blame them, but I just think that there would be much less of a hesitation if someone had come and said something horrible about black people.
Oh, it would have been immediate. That's for sure.
Or certainly, like, if there was a doping scandal with some athlete that, you know, wears Adidas.
Right, because I think there were cases in the past where apparel companies have cut off ties with athletes that had steroid issues and things like that. But, right. You know, Lahav, we've spoken about this before. And you tweet about this quite often. I saw one of your tweets just the other day. When it comes to anti-Semitism, people are a little more comfortable and willing to turn a blind eye more often.
Yeah, unfortunately. And then the other thing I see is that people are like, but what about Palestine? You know, which I find infuriating. I mean, a person can't write anything about Israel without getting, you know, online, without getting bombarded with Free Palestine. But the fact is that Kanye West said nothing, absolutely nothing about Israel or Palestinians. All of his anti-Semitism was like, Jews control the media, Jews control the music industry, Jews are the reason that black people get so many abortions. So, you know, what does this have to do with the Palestinians? To me, that's like anti-Semitic in of itself, to say, like, you know, you can't speak out against anti-Semitism unless you meet these conditions of political, you know, agreement with me.
One of the best tweets I saw was, so CAA, which is big talent agency, had represented Kanye West. The CEO of the company is Ari Emanuel of Endeavor. Is Ari Emanuel, who is actually the brother of former mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. I think he's now the ambassador of the United States to Japan. But anyhow, Ari Emanuel announced that they're cutting off ties with Kanye West. And I saw someone on Twitter tweet out, well, this is what we meant when we said that Jews are controlling the world, right? Because Ari Emanuel,
You can't win,
right? So the guy's anti-Semitic. So there's the Jew who happens to be at the head of the company, cuts off ties. So of course the Jews control the world. Come on. The whole thing's ridiculous. Thank God Adidas made the right decision. We can all keep our Adidas shoes. I personally don't have any, but my kids do. So, you know, they can all breathe a sigh of relief. And now that we have that out of the way, we have the big story of the week, Lahav, which is our elections, which are coming up. It's the final countdown to next Tuesday, November 1st. Israel goes to the polls for the fifth time in the last 3 years. And it's tiring. It's kind of boring, but it's also an important election, I feel.
Every election is important, I think, including this one. But it's tiring because it just feels like the same thing over and over again. I don't think this election is so different from the previous one in terms of the issues that people care about. I think there's maybe a lot more anger on the right, and maybe that'll galvanize voters. I don't know. A poll I saw this week showed slightly less turnout on the right, like planned turnout on the right, than on the left. Nothing new under the sun.
I mean, the one big change, which we spoke about last week, is the rise of Itamar Ben-Gvir and his party. So I don't want to rehash that once again, but that does... That is kind of shaking things up just a bit. But you know, you're right. It's the same story. And we have an interview later with Menachem Lazar, who's the head of Panels Politics, who talks about kind of the trends that he's been identifying, doing weekly and even twice, three times a week polls of how Israelis are going to vote. But he breaks it down interestingly. There's the pro BB camp, there's the anti BB camp. That's how it was for the last four elections. That's how it is for this election. And that will continue to be the case as long as Netanyahu's in the picture, I think. So there might be a little change to here, a little change to there, but you see that the blocks aren't moving. And therefore, why would there be a different outcome? So we're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. It is, the definition of insanity. Our politics have gone insane. They continue to be insane. You know, I was actually thinking about it last night. I was thinking about when is the last time we had a stable government? Because I have this setting on my TV. I don't have real TV. I only have like streaming services. And so when I'm not streaming something, it shows me pictures of my family. And I saw a picture from the first election day in 2019. And my daughter was 2 years old, and I was pregnant with my son. My daughter is now almost six. She knows how to read. My son is in public preschool. Like, that's how long it's been since we felt like we had government stability. I mean, it was just, it's just crazy.
You know, I had a conversation last night with my oldest daughter, who is now 19. She just went into the army 2 months ago, and she's talking to me about who to vote for. And I told her, you have to decide what you think is right. And she's going kind of through the different parties, and she's looking, and she's actually trying to do homework and read up on platforms, and she's Googling what do they stand for. I mean, you know, it's to me, it was quite moving. I have to say, I was proud as a father that my child is actually trying to educate herself and to learn as much as possible about the different candidates. But she was saying to me about certain parties, I can't find the matzah, I can't find the platform, right? Well, I had to explain to her that a lot of the parties don't have platforms, because here in Israel, we don't really debate policy. We only talk about different identity politics, or more about who is the person running and what camp do we support, whether it's Netanyahu or not. But I think that a lot of people are just confused, and you know, it leads to the strange movement that we see sometimes within voting patterns of how you have, you could have a voter who's conflicted between voting for, on the one hand, Benny Gantz, who's the head of the National Unity Party and is currently the defense minister. And on the other hand, think about maybe even voting for Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir from the Religious Zionist Party. Like, the same person can be in both mindsets or both spaces at the same time, which is... should be crazy, but in Israel's crazy reality, that has become something that's normal.
Honestly, like, it makes no sense to me, but I think it's just maybe a level of, like, I sit in front of the news all day long and I constantly follow and I actually know what the people stand for, and maybe other people view it more casually, because I also see, like, a lot of people who call Benny Gantz, like, even moderate right wing, and I just don't think it's true. It's not, you know, pro or con him. It's just like not true when you actually see what he does and what he has done. So I feel like it's sort of casual, like people who just aren't getting into it. But it also, it's hard to get into it because you're right. Most of the parties don't have platforms, and that's really unfortunate.
And that's what leads people to think that Benny Gantz is right wing when I agree with you, he's not.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it speaks to something that, we talk about with Menachem Lazar in the interview, which is that it's not an election between left and right. It's just about yes, BB or no BB, to BB or not to BB, is the question. And, you know, so if you're a right wing person, you could be really all in a lot of places in the current political map. I mean, like Avigdor Lieberman is no less right wing than he used to be. His focus is maybe a little different, but even like he's been finance minister now for a year, and most of his economic policies, not all of them, but most of them I would consider economic right wing, although that division has always been different in Israel.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it'll be fascinating to see what the numbers are. I think that probably the most two, you know, there's three scenarios that are being spoken about for the most part. The first is that, and this is the simplest one, is that Netanyahu gets to 61. Some polls show that he has it. Some polls show that he doesn't have it. That would be the Likud together with the Religious Zionist Party and the two ultra-Orthodox parties, Shas and United Torah Judaism. If that gets him over the 61, he would be able to form that government. The second option is that that doesn't happen. And then Yair Lapid, who would be the second largest party based on the polls, somehow manages to pull together a government, which doesn't seem really possible. Benny Gantz is also kind of in there saying that I'm the one who can form a government, which I also don't fully understand how he would be able to do that because the numbers also there don't add up. And then the third scenario is that we go to a sixth election. Right. I mean, you know, I guess there's another scenario. Likud splits.
I think we should explain also just why the Benny Gantz thing doesn't make sense. Right.
Please.
Because he said he won't sit in a government with Netanyahu, Netanyahu being the leader of Likud. And then the other parties in Netanyahu's block can't sit with him. First of all, he won't sit with Religious Zionism because of Itamar Ben-Gvir. Right. And then the two Haredi parties are just completely in the tank, committed to Netanyahu. It's possible that Moshe Gafni, the head of Degel HaTorah, which is the non-Hasidic Haredi party within the United Torah Judaism, so he could give Gantz two or three seats. But it just, Gantz has made enough promises, and they make sense with his, you know, the ideas he espouses, but he's made too many promises that won't let him pick anyone off from the other side, practically.
No, and also, you know, Gafni, it won't happen, right? Gafni concerned about votes because the ultra-Orthodox are losing votes to Ben-Gvir. The last thing that he would want to do is join with Benny Gantz, and that would be the end of his political career and the end of his party, right? I think if anything, if there's any big lesson from the Naftali Bennett experience, is that when you do a 180, you end up paying the price now. And that is something that I think, you know, Aryeh Deri, for example, Shas, he could be the one to make the government. He could say, I'll come to the other side if Benny Gantz is prime minister, right?
You know, someone on Twitter suggested something interesting about Shas that I forgot to ask Menachem Lazar, but Shas is often really under-polled, and all Shas needs is to get one more seat than what they're polling, than how they're polling, and Netanyahu has a majority. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and their voters are big supporters of Netanyahu. So that's also something to keep in mind. You and I we paid a visit this week to the prime minister's office, and we met with Yair Lapid. We interviewed him. We published already a kind of promo for the larger interview that will come out on Friday or Thursday. It will go online. We spoke to him about a range of topics, from the situation in Ukraine to the Iran nuclear threat to his concern about what will happen with Itamar Ben-Gvir, what vision he offers to the state of Israel versus the other side. What was your big takeaway, Lahav, from the interview with Lapid?
Well, we talked about a lot of like foreign policy things, and you know, it's interesting because he seems genuinely conflicted about Ukraine, which is kind of what you would expect because he was the biggest sort of person speaking out against Russia before he became prime minister. But he had said to us that, you know, you can't always do what you think is the right thing to do because you're balancing different interests, right? And so while he thinks the right thing to do is to support Ukraine as proactively as possible, maybe he even, I mean, I can't read his mind, maybe he even thinks that we need to be supplying them with weapons or defensive weapons at least. But then he views it being a problem for Israel's national security. And he said to us, he expressed his frustration. He showed us scratches on his desk. And he said he likes to imagine that, you know, Menachem Begin or Ariel Sharon or all these other prime ministers had, you know, scratched the desk out of frustration. And he says, you know, and this was in his answer to the Ukraine question. He said sometimes he has his own scratches, too. Right. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, that definitely conflicted. But I think, you know, the conflicted is kind of a big part of Lapid over the years. It seems, you know, someone who really tries, and he spoke a lot about this idea of, you know, centrist and what it means to be in the center. And we challenged him, right? We said, maybe you're actually the guy who's on the wrong side of things right now, right? The trend seems to be that the rise to power of the right and the nationalists, and maybe this is the Itamar Ben-Gvir, Bezalel Smotrich, BB moment. He pushed back on that. You know, he mentioned Macron's re-election, Olaf Scholz's election in Germany, Biden, of course. And he very much kind of tries to push this ideology. It's almost like a religion for him and for Yesh Atid of what it means to be a centrist. But that being a centrist comes with it constant conflict, right? On the one hand, you know, sometimes you lean right, sometimes you lean left. It's a lot of gray as opposed to black and white, which might, you know, help explain the way he kind of looks at the Ukraine situation.
Yeah.
What I also found interesting were those two pictures that he had behind him. One was of Menachem Begin and one was of David Ben-Gurion. Both two politicians, Begin, a former leader of Likud, David Ben-Gurion, you know, the founder of the country, Mapai, which then morphed into the Labor Party, not Yesh Atid. And he said, yeah, but you see the space between these two pictures? This is where I am, and these guys would anyhow be part of my party today, which was interesting.
I mean, to some extent, I think he's right. Like, I think that Menachem Begin in many ways is to the left of the current Likud, even though he's 100% like their icon and that, you know, Likudniks love Begin. Overall, by the way, when in polls show that Begin is the most beloved former prime minister. But I found what I also found interesting was he redecorated in another way, which is he has this huge, like, mural sized blown up photo of Ben Gurion reading Israel's Declaration of Independence in Independence Hall in Tel Aviv. That's like it's right next to his desk and it's like the whole wall. And that's it, you know, I guess that's what he looks at every day and that's what inspires him, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, it's kind of like a U.S. president, right? You know, there's always these stories when a new president moves into the Oval Office, what pictures or what busts are you going to find on top of the fireplace and what painting is going to be? Remember Donald Trump put up, was it Andrew Jackson, right?
And that yeah.
Like, stirred controversy at the time.
And Obama took down Winston Churchill.
And Obama took that down was Winston another Churchill. One. Everybody has their icons and their role models. Also, Yair Lapid. Listen, Lahav, when we record next week, will we know the outcome of the election?
I'm going to say you can never know for sure, first of all, because things are so crazy, but that we'll have a better idea, I think.
Yeah. I think we'll have a better idea. I think we just need a break. I mean, you know, if I could just, as we've now been through together, this is our fifth election. It's a lot for a country. Forget about the newspaper. It's a lot for a country.
Look, I have a tendency to run away just when a government's about to be formed, and I'm going to be doing that to you again when I go on maternity leave at the end of this year. So I'll get the break. It's not exactly a vacation, but right. I'll get a break from the politics.
It should always be a break for good things like that, though. So we're willing to accept that you won't be here once the government has to come together. Please, God, looking forward to it. But for now, stay tuned for an interview with Panels Politics pollster Menachem Lazar. Election is on November 1st, next Tuesday. There's a lot going on. And one of the things that, or the tools that's used is obviously polls. We're joined today by Menachem Lazar, who's the head of Panels Politics, one of the leading pollsters in Israel, does a lot of polling for the Jerusalem Post Group. Mariv, one of the newspapers as part of the group, as well as for us. And Menachem, we wanted to kind of get your take on where this, what the situation looks like, what trends you're identifying in the numbers. There's a lot of different data points that are coming out. For example, what's going to be the voter turnout? What is it going to look like in the Arab sector, et cetera? So why don't you kind of give us first the overview? What's unique about this election compared to, let's say, the last four?
We always think that the coming elections are dull, and we've seen it before, and now it's the fifth election campaign in 4 years. So what can be new? But everything is new. Every election campaign is new. But what we have now is that in the last week or so, we see that the voters are stuck in each camp. There is no transition of votes between the two candidates, those parties who support Benjamin Netanyahu and those parties who oppose Benjamin Netanyahu. There is no transition of voters. In minor cases, maybe someone didn't wake up in the morning and didn't hear the question. I don't think that that this will be the case. The story is about what's going on inside both camps, for the Likud and the Religious Zionism Party, and for Yesh Atid and the Machaneh Mamlachti of Benny Gantz and the other parties at the other side.
How big a role do you think that turnout is going to play? I know that Netanyahu has been very focused on trying to raise turnout. And then there's also talk about Arab turnout being very low.
It's going to play a major role in this coming election, like it did last time. At the last election, the 2021, the turnout was 67%, and the Arabs were down to 46 or 45%. It was an historical score, minor score for the Arab population in Israel. We started this campaign about a month or 2 months ago. We thought it would be worse this time. The figures were around 40%, even less. And the last week, we've seen a rise in these numbers. Now it's about 45% of the Arab voters saying that they're going to vote. We don't know if all of them will go, but 45%, around 45% are saying that they are sure, they are definite, that they are going to vote in the election next week. Even though there is a danger, because now there are three Arab parties in this coming election, there is a threat that none of them will be in the next Knesset. Balad is way down, about 2% in our last survey. It's below the threshold. The other two parties are above it, but they are in the range of losing it. Everything can happen in the next week. If they will not pass the limit, I say about 45%, there is a danger, there is a threat that no Arab party will be in the next Knesset.
You mentioned before the fact that there's no transition between the camps, right? So the fighting is going on primarily inside the camps. Lapid is trying to take from Gantz and Labor and vice versa. And Bibi, Likud is fighting with Bezalel Smotrich. And we saw the leaking of different recordings over the last couple of days. Smotrich saying something about Netanyahu, Ben-Gvir, etc. I'm curious, why do you think that is? In other words, is it just that Israelis are very entrenched and inside their camps? They're not willing to move, or is it something different? Like, because it's not, the right and left is not the way it used to be. It's not that classic kind of distinction anymore.
It's not the right or left struggle. Ever since 2019, the first election in 2019, when Avigdor Lieberman abandoned Netanyahu's camp and joins the other side, there is no fight between left and right. There is a fight between those who want Benjamin Netanyahu to be the prime minister and those who don't want him. And it's going on elections after elections after elections. So there is no reason why people should change their mind, because they're fixed. They don't want Netanyahu on one side, or they very much want Netanyahu on the other side. So that's where we are. We are in no different place from the last election, except that many voters of Naftali Bennett were truly disappointed from what he did. He called himself Yamina, or the new Yamin, the new right, or the right. And going with left parties like Meretz and Avodah, not to mention Ram, the Arab party, was completely, it looked like a complete betrayal on their part. So what Yamina did shocked the whole political system. And now the voters of Yamina are everywhere.
So they're everywhere and they're kind of changing. Some of them are in the right-wing block. Some of them are in the center-left block, right? They're not exactly
again,
clear.
Some of them are in Netanyahu block and some of them are in the opposition to Netanyahu.
The opposition. Okay,
I understand. It's not right and left. Most of them were right from the beginning and they're still in the right. And Avigdor Lieberman is in the right. And Gideon Saar and Zev Elkin are in the right. But they don't want Netanyahu to be the prime minister.
So this relates to something very strange that I've read and heard on, you know, radio programs talking about the polls, that there are people who are debating between voting for Benny Gantz, his National Unity Party, and voting for the Religious Zionist Party that includes, you know, Itamar Ben-Gvir, the sort of most extreme right that's running in this Knesset. How do you explain that? Like, is that something you've found as well?
Yes, we can find such people. They are right-wing people. They are right-wing, and now they need to decide whether they want Benjamin Netanyahu to be the prime minister or not. If they are religious Zionist people, it's for the first time since 1956 that they don't have a home, a political home, a sectarian political home. They used to be the Mafdal all these years. Then the name changed, but it was this, in essence the same political party, but it's gone. They don't have a political house, so they don't know what to decide. Some of them were with Ayelet Shaked until last few days. I don't know how many of them will continue to say that they want to vote for Ayelet Shaked and the Jewish Home Party. And so they don't know yet if they go with Benny Gantz, who has in his party people belonging to the religious Zionist camp. Or the other alternative, if it's not the Likud, the only religious party is Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, and it's very hard for them. But they are people who are going to vote. It's not like Arab voters. If they are not pleased with what's going on, they will stay at home. Religious, Zionist people, Israelis, are voting. It's in their DNA. So they need to decide which is worse, I think. Not which is better, but which is worse.
Menachem, could you explain something? The Israeli system is very complicated, and there's a lot of talk, for example, you spoke a bit about this just before, about the Arab turnout. But what a lot of people say, and this is what the Lapid camp and the anti-BB camp is hoping for, a larger Arab turnout, and the pro-BB camp is hoping for a lower Arab turnout. Why does that make such a difference? In other words, if there's a lower Arab turnout, that's better for the Netanyahu camp. Can you explain that, why that is?
The whole balance of power will change. If there will be a low Arab turnout, and the Arab party will not pass the threshold, they will not be members of the next. So the whole balance is changing in favor of the right. Because, you know, sociologically, most of the Israelis are in the right. If you look at the current Knesset, most of the current Knesset members are right-wing people. The Netanyahu split is confusing us. So if the Arab parties will not be in the next Knesset, the balance is changing in favor of Netanyahu. That's why he wants it to be low.
Mm-hmm. And what that means, essentially, if I'm understanding you correctly, is that if Netanyahu were suddenly not in the equation, right? So there's a lot of speculation. What would happen if he stepped away? But based on what you're saying, because of this strange division that we have, which is the pro-Netanyahu camp, the anti-Netanyahu camp, but that there are people in the right or in the anti-Netanyahu camp, etc., it would shake everything up again. Like the whole map would go crazy.
Yes, just like it was in the last election when Naftali Bennett went to the other side, some people say. So things like that can happen now. We don't know yet because we don't know what will be the final score in this election, but everything can happen. Mm-hmm. There are talks about splitting the Likud. There are talks about Gafni taking his side of the Agudat Israel, Yadut HaTorah, joining Yair Lapid if he will find himself in the opposition again and again. No one knows what exactly is going to happen. It doesn't have to do anything with the surveys. It has to do a lot of with politics.
So I have a question that does have to do with polls. Okay. Back in 2019, right, when we talked about the sort of wild card and anything could happen, we were often talking about Moshe Feilin, and he was polling pretty well, and then he didn't make it into the Knesset at all.
Yeah.
And I thought of this when the Religious Zionist Party has ballooned into 13 seats, 12 seats in a lot of polls. Is there a chance that this is a bubble that's going to pop?
I don't think. What happened to Feiglin was there was a clash between his voters and Bennett's voters, and both parties didn't pass in these elections, if you remember. We call it cannibalism. There wasn't enough voters, there weren't enough voters for both parties, so they both went down. What's going on with the party of, I will say, Itamar Ben-Gvir, because he's a prominent figure in this story. I think that we underestimate what happened to the Israelis in the, what we call Shomer HaChomot, in the
Operation Guardians of the Wall last year.
Yeah. What happened in towns in Israel, mixed town, Arab and Jewish towns in Israel, and what it did to the sense of security to Jewish Israelis inside the country of Israel. I'm not talking about Yehuda Shomron. I'm talking about the land of the state of Israel. People thought that it was safe, it was secure, and it blew up. And Itamar Ben-Gvir is manipulating these feelings of insecurity into voting. He goes and pushes on the buttons that inflict the Israelis' fear of what's going on, what's going to be in the next years if this is what happened last year. So I don't think it's a bubble. I don't know if the final score will be 14 or 10 or even 20. I don't know, but I guess it will be a double figure. Yes, because it's genuine.
So you mentioned cannibalism. Do you think there's a chance that Labor or Meretz will cannibalize one another and either both or one of them won't get in?
If there is a chance of cannibalism in this side of the map, it will be between Yesh Atid and those parties, because Yesh Atid and Yair Lapid wants to be as close to the Likud as possible. The only way he can do it is by taking votes from Meretz or the Labor Party. Maybe Benny Gantz, but I think that what we see now in the surveys is that the Labor Party and Meretz are both in danger. I think the Labor Party is more in danger than Meretz because the Meretz voters are more definite about their decisions than Labor Party voters. So I think that there is a chance that if Yair Lapid and his party will grow close to the Likud, it will be, they will pay the price by losing one of those two parties.
Well, it's always interesting. And as we know in Israel, the political situation here is quite crazy.
Yeah.
And we might be having this conversation in just a few weeks as we head to another sixth election. So Menachem, we thank you for joining us at the Jerusalem Post podcast. Thank you for doing your polls. And we look forward to seeing what'll be after these elections and whether Israel finally gets some stability. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope we will be in touch, not connecting to six elections.
Be'ezrat Hashem. Thank you. Thanks for listening to this week's Jerusalem Post podcast. Please share with your friends, family, and followers. You can find us on Apple, Google, and wherever podcasts are played. And we'll see you next week.